Chapter 25. The graveyard to which Yvette had had Laurent's remains moved had no name, Umberto told them, but it was hundreds of years old, dating back to when Elba was still a French protectorate. Nor was it on any map. They took the Lancia and followed the main road to the outskirts of the village, then turned north, heading higher into the mountains, now in complete shadow as the sun set. After 10 minutes, Umberto, who was riding in the back seat, said, "Stop the car, please." "What's wrong?" Sam said. "Just pull over, please." Sam did so, shutting off the headlights and coasting to a stop. Sam and Remy turned around to see Umberto rubbing his forehead.
"I've done something terrible," he murmured.
"What?"
"I'm leading you into a trap."
"What are you talking about?" Remy asked.
"This afternoon, while we were still in town, Bianco came to my home. Teresa called me. He threatened to kill us if we didn't help him."
"Why are you telling us this?"
"The gun. My father took that gun from a man who was threatening his family, his friends. He was afraid too, I am sure, just like I am. But he fought back. I have to do the same. I'm very sorry."
Sam and Remy were silent for a few minutes. Then Remy said, "You told us. That's enough. Are they waiting for us?"
"No. But they're coming."
He checked his watch.
30 minutes, no more. "I am to let you open the crypt and recover whatever you've come for. Then they'll take it and kill you both, I imagine. And perhaps me as well."
"How many men?" Sam asked.
"I don't know."
Umberto pulled a spare magazine for his own Luger from his pocket and handed it over the seat to Sam.
"The bullets in yours are dummies."
"Thanks. But why give us a gun at all?"
"I wanted to gain your trust. I hope you can forgive me."
"We'll let you know in an hour or so. If you cross us..."
"You have my permission to shoot me."
"I'll hold you to that," Sam said, staring him in the eyes. Remy said, "What about Teresa? Won't she—"
"She's already gone," Umberto replied. "I have cousins in Nisporto. They'll protect her."
"Well, we have the sat phone. Call the police."
"Umberto?"
The Italian shook his head.
"They wouldn't get here in time."
"We can turn around, or keep going and do our damnedest to get in and out before they get here."
"There are only 2 roads in and out of here," Umberto said, "and Bianco will have both watched. You can be sure of that."
Remy looked at Sam.
"You're quiet?"
"Thinking." The engineer in him was looking for an elegant solution, but he quickly realized he was overthinking the situation. Much like with their initial run-in with Arkhipov at the boiler graveyard, they had neither the time nor the resources for a sophisticated plan.
"Fortune favors the bold," he finally said.
"Oh, no.
He who dares wins," Sam added.
"I know what that means," Remy said.
"What?" Umberto asked. "What's happening?"
"We're going to make it up as we go along."
Sam started the car, put it in gear, and pulled out. They found the graveyard in a weed-filled meadow surrounded on 3 sides by hillocks covered in pine and cork trees. Only an acre in size, it was surrounded by a waist-high wrought iron fence that had long ago been overtaken by rust and vines. Befitting the evening's task, a low fog filled the meadow, swirling around the headstones and crypts. The sky was clear, showing a bright full moon.
"Okay, I'm officially creeped out," Remy said, staring through the windshield as Sam brought the car to a stop before the gate.
He shut off the engine and doused the headlights. Somewhere in the trees, an owl hooted twice, then went silent.
"All we're missing is howling wolves," she whispered.
"No wolves on Elba," Umberto replied. "Wild dogs. And snakes. Many snakes."
The graveyard was arranged haphazardly with no regard to spacing or symmetry. Headstones jutted from the weeds at odd angles, some within a foot of its neighbor, while crypts of all shapes and sizes rose from the ground in various states of disrepair, crumbling or overgrown by foliage, or collapsed altogether. In contrast, several crypts, freshly painted, were islands of manicured grass and flowers. "They're not much for civil planning, are they?" Sam said.
"It's been here so long the government can't bring itself to intervene," Umberto replied. "The truth is, I can't remember the last time anyone was buried here."
"How many are here?"
"Many hundreds, I think. Some graves are deep, some shallow. The dead are stacked atop one another."
Remy asked, "Where's Laurent's crypt?" Umberto leaned forward and pointed through the windshield.
"That one, in the far corner. The one with the domed roof."
Sam checked his watch. "Time to find out how well the Lancia holds up to punishment." He started the engine, did a wide turn on the gravel drive, then spun the wheel and drove into the meadow, the tall grass scraping the car's underbody. He followed the fence line to the back of the graveyard and coasted to a stop behind Laurent's crypt. He shut off the engine again.
"Where does that go?"
Sam asked Umberto, pointing past Remy out the passenger window. A half mile away, a pair of tire ruts disappeared over the hill and into the trees beyond.
"I have no idea. It's an old mining road. It hasn't been used for 70, 80 years, since before the war."
Remy murmured, "The road less traveled."
"Not for long," Sam replied.
He opened the door and climbed out, Remy and Umberto following. To Remy, he said, "Why don't you wait here? Slide into the driver's seat and keep your eyes peeled. We'll just be a minute." He and Umberto walked to the fence and hopped over. Compared to some of its neighbors, Laurent's crypt was small, not much bigger than a walk-in closet and barely 4 feet tall. But walking around to the front side, Sam saw that it was sunk into the ground a few feet. 3 moss-covered steps led to a rough-hewn wooden door. Sam pulled his LED microlight from his pocket and shined it on the lock while Umberto used the key. In keeping with the fog, the hooting owls, and the full moon, the hinges moaned as Umberto swung open the door. He glanced back at Sam and smiled nervously.
"Keep an eye out," Sam said.
He walked down the steps and through the door and found himself facing a curtain of cobwebs. Under the blue-white glow of his flashlight, spiders scrambled across the webs and disappeared. Using his hand like a blade, Sam slowly cut the curtain down the center. Desiccated flies and moths pattered on the stone floor. Sam stepped inside. The space measured 5 feet deep and 8 feet wide and smelled of dust and rat droppings. To his right, he heard the faint scratching of tiny claws on stone, then silence. In the center, the sarcophagus, which was devoid of either markings or adornment, stood on a 3-foot-high platform made of red brick. He stepped around the sarcophagus to the rear wall, then placed the flashlight between his teeth and gave the lid a tentative shove. It was lighter than he'd anticipated, sliding a couple inches with a hollow grating sound. Sam pushed the lid another few inches, then grabbed the projecting end and walked the lid around until it was sitting perpendicular to the sarcophagus. He shined his light inside.
"Nice to finally meet you, Monsieur Laurent," he whispered.
Arnaud Laurent, now nothing more than a skeleton, had been buried in what Sam assumed was the full dress uniform of a Napoleonic-era army general, complete with ceremonial sword. Lying between his black booted feet was a wooden box the size of a large hardcover book. Sam carefully lifted the box free, blew off the layer of dust covering it, then knelt down and placed it on the floor. Inside, he found an ivory comb, a flattened musket ball speckled with a flaky brown substance Sam guessed was blood, a few medals in tiny silk pouches, an oval-shaped gold locket inside which he found a picture of a woman, Laurent's wife Marie, he assumed, and finally, a palm-sized brown leather book. Breath held, Sam gently opened the book at its midpoint and could see, in the narrow beam of his flashlight,
a line of 8 new shapes.
Bingo, he whispered.
He returned the other items to the box, returned it to its place between Laurent's feet, and was about to close the lid when his flashlight glinted off something metallic. Wedged between Laurent's boot and the wall of the sarcophagus was what looked like a thumb-sized steel chisel. Sam fished it out. It was a die stamp, he realized, a type of stone chisel. One end was flattened like the head of a nail. The other end was concave with a knife-edged border. He shined his flashlight into the indentation. It was the outline of a cicada.
Thank you, General, Sam whispered. I wish we could have met 2 centuries ago.
He pocketed the stamp, closed the lid, and stepped out. Umberto was nowhere to be seen. Sam walked back up to ground level and looked around.
Umberto?
He whispered.
Umberto, where are—
At the cemetery's gate, a pair of headlights flashed to life, pinning him in their glare. He held his hand before his eyes, squinting.
Don't move, Mr. Fargo.
A Russian-accented voice echoed through the graveyard.
There is a rifle aimed at your head. Raise your hands above your head.
Sam complied, then muttered out of the side of his mouth,
Remy, go.
Get out of here.
That's going to be a problem, Sam.
Slowly, he rotated his head over his shoulder. Standing beside the Lancia's driver's side door, a revolver pressed against Remy's temple, was Carmine Bianco.